AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Coron Metra. When the time is right for nutrition, give your crops more than just nitrogen with Coron Metra, the next evolution in foliar fertilizers. Vaccine mandates, lower tariffs on steel and aluminum, supply chain disruptions, the infrastructure bill, transparency of the cash cattle market. Yeah, settle in. We've got a lot of ground to cover in a jam-packed show.
Live from a significant day in my own personal family history that is none of your business, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Chuck Connor, president of the National Council of Farmer Co-ops. Then it's Kip Eidelberg from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Later, Matt Deppe, CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. And right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
All right, Davis. Well, it makes me wonder why you even bring it up then.
I know. Just to make you wonder. That's all.
Okay. Well,
just to make you wonder.
I'm not going to press it. I'm not going to press it. If it's none of my business, it's none of my business.
I think you were around for this event. It was 1981.
Yeah.
There were calves loose.
Yeah.
On the run.
That's
today. That's today.
That's
I love you.
Today.
I love you, Dad. I think he might be listening. That's why I brought it up.
I love you, Uncle Ronnie.
This is for an audience of one.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That was today. That was today.
Yes. In 1981. I'm no math magician, but that's like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's like a long time ago. 40 years ago, like exactly. Yeah. Wow. I'm glad that you brought that up. Hey, we have got so much ground to cover. When last week, when the White House made the announcement on the vaccine mandates, okay, which are now held up in court, I get that.
Yeah,
but it is like the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. They had the reaction from President Chuck Connor queued up and ready to go, because as soon as the announcement was made, they had a reaction out that was very unsupportive of the vaccine mandates. And I'm curious about why such a quick reaction, and to get Chuck Connor's take on this. Don't forget, Mr. Connor was a special advisor to President George W. Bush in the White House, an ag advisor. So we can get Chuck's take on how the whole vaccine issue is being handled and what's going on in the White House right now. So looking forward to that. And, of course, Kip Eidelberg, let's get his reaction to the infrastructure bill. That might mean something to manufacturers, Davis.
Yeah.
I think maybe. All right, buddy, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, let's begin with highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update for the week ended November 7. Corn, 84% harvested compares to 78% on average. Soybeans, 87% harvested compares to 88%. Cotton, 98% bolls open compares to 98% on average. 55% harvested, just 2 points behind the average pace. Winter wheat, 91% planted, 74% emerged, 45% good to excellent. That good to excellent unchanged. Rating at 45% unchanged on the week, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that the market is going to look at. But, Davis, right now it's all about getting ready for 11 o'clock.
Sure.
And at 11 o'clock we got the supply and demand and the crop production estimates.
Well, speaking of which, traders anticipate USDA will continue to raise its corn and soybean crop estimates. The average pre-report estimate from a Reuters survey puts the corn crop at 15.05 billion bushels and the soybean crop at 4.484 billion bushels. The bigger crop estimate is expected to increase the 21-22 bean ending stocks projection, but traders see corn carryover declining. The report is expected to show little, if any, change to U.S. wheat ending stocks.
Yeah, the average trade guess on the soybean carryover, 362 million bushels. I mean, that's up 40 million bushels from last month. That's that's getting into the, okay, now we understand why we're under 12 bucks in bean futures area.
Well, the U.S. plans to invest in 5 to 10 large infrastructure projects around the world in January as part of a broader group of seven, that's G7, program to counter China's Belt and Road Initiative, a senior U.S. official said on Monday. Officials are meeting government and private sector leaders as they hunt for projects to be funded under the, get this, Build Back Better World initiative launched by the G7 in June. Yeah. Chip, that, honestly, that just gives me the creeps. It gives me the creeps. Yeah. They're going to call that Build Back Better World?
Yep. No, I hear you, man. I hear you. And I get exactly what you're talking about. And they are going to be, other countries, are going to be looking for trillions of dollars to get these projects done. And you know where they're going to look. They're going to come straight and knock on the White House door for those dollars.
Old Daddy Warbucks. Yeah. Well, the lingering strike at Deere & Company has dealers bracing for delayed deliveries of new equipment and farmers fearing higher prices ahead. Supplies of new tractors and combines across the farm belt have been stretched for months as manufacturers struggle with shortages of raw materials, components, and semiconductor chips. Now, farmers and dealers worry that shipments from Deere will be further undermined after more than 10,000 union workers walked off the job in October.
We'll talk to Kip about that coming up in just a bit.
Well, German manufacturers are struggling to produce cars and factory equipment because of parts and labor shortages. Chinese businesses, Germany's biggest customers, are turning to competitors. U.S. government energy report due out today may determine whether the Biden administration will decide to release crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Administration officials will be looking for significant revisions to price forecasts and supply and demand balances. And finally, Chip, the White House said it's waiting on a study by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers before deciding whether to wade into a debate over the future of a controversial oil pipeline that carries Canadian oil across the Great Lakes.
We've got a lot to talk about that at some point.
Sir.
Just not right now, okay?
Right. Yeah.
Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Karen Bonner. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Karen?
Hey, I'm good. Happy Tuesday, good. Chip.
Yeah, happy Tuesday to you. You can't know where you're going if you don't know where you're at, and sometimes that takes a complete financial checkup, doesn't it?
It does. Well, that's a true statement. With the new year on the horizon, we probably need to look at our fitness, and especially our financial fitness should be the goal for every producer, especially with the costs going up from labor, feed, everything else. Knowing your numbers is really key to help planning your future for your dairy. Gary Sikorsky, I was able to sit down and talk to him. He's an independent ag business financial consultant, and he highly recommends producers reviewing 12 benchmarks annually, really, if not quarterly. They're more important than ever before to know the producers really how they're faring, but also for the lenders. Quickly, a few of those benchmarks, Chip, our income per cow should be $5,000. This applies to every single cow in that barn, including dry cows. Don't factor in other enterprises unrelated to milk sales, such as grain or steers. Second, cost of producing that 100 pounds of milk. That should be $17, obviously adjusted for color breeds. But the bottom line is that you need to produce milk more than you sell it for. Less than you sell it for. And sometimes it is, you know, you're producing, your costs are off kilter. So you really need to know those numbers. Let's look at debt per cow. That needs to be $3,000 to $5,000. It really depends on the farm's repayment ability in terms of the amortization of the loan. Some farms can manage as high as $7,000 to $10,000 of debt per cow. This is a lender producer discussion and decision. It's okay to borrow money, Sikorsky says, but you got to do it for the right purposes. Really, what all this boils down to, Chip, is 30% of dairy producers earn $1.25 more per hundredweight than the average producer. That's a lot of money over time. So knowing your numbers is key. You can't manage it if you can't measure it.
That's exactly right. Where do we go for more details on that, Karen?
Yeah, those 12 benchmarks, Chip, are dairyherd.com. It'll help you read it up, and you can achieve financial fitness in 2022.
Excellent.
Everybody's goal.
Excellent. Thank you.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeat's November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Breaking news, Davis. Breaking news. We have word now that U.S. Senators Deb Fischer, Chuck Grassley, John Tester, Ron Wyden are announcing a compromise cattle market proposal known as the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act. That news is just being released.
Wow.
I mean, I literally got the email seconds ago. Huh, it's a good thing that we've got Matt Deppy, Iowa Cattleman, coming up at the end of the show to have a conversation about exactly what is going on here. Good deal. Good deal. All right, right
now. This is how
we
pull the future forward.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Right now, though, let's have a conversation with Chuck Connor. He is the president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. He's a former USDA deputy secretary and was a special assistant to President George W. Bush. Mr. Connor, thank you so much for making time for AgriTalk again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today.
You bet. Okay, last week, when the Biden administration's directive that employers with more than 100 employees mandate their employees to get a COVID vaccine, it's been held up in court. We understand that. But, Chuck, boy, the NCFC was quick to respond when that announcement was made by the White House. Why was it important to be quick with that, with the reaction to this?
Well, we just felt the impact was too important, Chip, not to be awfully quick in terms of our response. You know, we're all in favor of vaccinations, and co-ops out there have done a lot to promote, you know, vaccinations, including providing sites there at the co-op. But having said that, the simple fact is a lot of agribusiness, including co-ops, operate in areas where at best, you know, it may be a 50% vaccination rate. Many, many workers choosing you know, for a variety of reasons, not to be vaccinated. At this point, it's our view that if you haven't been vaccinated, you know, getting you vaccinated is probably going to be an uphill climb. And right now, we cannot afford the loss of workers for, you know, for a critical sector like food and agriculture is. I mean, we're already seeing the impact of food price inflation and people getting spun up over these kinds of things. Our members are already operating below optimum capacity in terms of workers. We cannot afford to lose any more without impacting, you know, this great food system that we have in this country. And, you know, this just needs to be taken into consideration as the Biden administration plans next steps here for this vaccination mandate.
Yeah, I've got to step away from the vaccine mandate idea here for just a moment, because I know that you have worked for decades promoting immigration reform to get more farm labor in this country. Where do you think we stand on that right now, Chuck?
Well, we're not, you know, doing too well right now. We've got a bill that has passed the House that there are components of it we like a lot, but we're not getting a lot of traction in the Senate. We work on that every day, but frankly, it's just not a season where legislators are doing, you know, a lot in the Senate, other than, you know, what you read about in terms of the Build Back Better Act and the, of course, the work on infrastructure. It's hard to get their attention to focus on much else. And so we're not highly optimistic that we're going to get that immigration bill through, at least in this calendar year.
Okay. Well, we will continue to monitor that, though, of course, and looking for progress to be made on that. All right, okay, back to the vaccine mandate. And like I said, I understand that the mandate is now held up in court, but it was delivered by an OSHA emergency temporary standard. Is this the type of thing that we should expect from OSHA?
Well, certainly, you know, one of the interesting things of the ways of Washington is, you know, we believe strongly that OSHA was not even aware that this mandate was coming down the pike when it was announced by the White House. So they were caught pretty flat-footed and had to, you know, put this together very, very rapidly. I think that's why there's probably a lot of problems with the rule, is the, you know, the haste and the lack of process that existed in developing this rule. Something like this, you know, impacting so many workers, you know, should have taken months of careful consideration, and they put it together, you know, in a matter of a few weeks after it was, you know, announced to them by the White House. So that's an unfortunate part of this process. But, you know, more importantly, you know, there just has to be adults in the room to look at this thing and say, yes, we want to do all we can to get as many people vaccinated as possible, but, you know, there are certain things in this country that have to happen, including feeding people. Yeah. And you know, that this has to be a factor in putting these things in place on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we talk about farmer cooperatives, Chuck, it's not like these guys are spending a lot of time cooped up in an office, you know. Anyway, they're out working independently of each other, and most of them are outside. It seems like a strange requirement for farm cooperatives. It really does.
Well, it is, Chip. And one of the things we argued with the White House and with OSHA was that, you know, particularly on the trucking side of the equation. I mean, these are people that are outdoors. They're isolated. You know, they are sort of socially distanced, if you will, by their very occupation, and that there should have been some exemption for, you know, a lot of those truckers. And, of course, that's the source of a lot of our, you know, labor problems is just moving product around already, even before this mandate was put into place. So we asked for special, you know, dispensation there. We didn't get it. You know, we're back to the point now and hoping that somewhere in this process, the courts slow this down to a point where we're able to, you know, again, put people in a room together and actually talk about implications and what you're trying to achieve, and are there better ways of doing what you're trying to achieve.
Right. Okay. You know, I would guess that you probably saw this, but the Government Business Council did a survey of government employees. I'm not sure how many they surveyed, but the majority of federal employees recently surveyed, we're talking about 53% either strongly or somewhat disagree with the Biden administration's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. 44% strongly or somewhat agreed with it. So even a majority of government employees, Chuck, are saying this mandate is a bad idea.
Right. And as you know, Chip, you know, for agriculture, this is especially important because so many of the government employees that we interact with are sort of out in the, you know, the county areas and the rural areas where, you know, the percent of vaccination is down. And so the, you know, potential impact there in our FSA and in our CS offices and others is great. And we need those offices right now to get us through some of these challenges that we face.
You're darn right. Yeah, and these people are willing to work.
Yep.
Let's keep them in a job here. I do need to get, you mentioned the infrastructure bill and all the focus on it, but I do need to get your take on that. What do you make of the infrastructure bill? It's a lot of spending, but it's spending that in many cases is long overdue, right?
It is, and we have come out and embraced that bill and commended Congress for getting it passed finally. You know, one of the things you need to remember in this, Chip, is that, you know, this was an infrastructure bill very, very similar to what the previous administration had been pushing as well.
Yep.
And so things have gotten more partisan today than they were then, and I realize that. But at the end of the day, Republicans and Democrats alike have stood up and said, we need to make a great infrastructure investment in this country, you know, whether it's broadband, bridges, roads, particularly waterways for agriculture. So, you know, overall, we just felt like this was a pretty good bill to get done. And, you know, it's not going to solve our immediate problems. These are long-term capital investments, but nevertheless, it's time to get those investments started.
Yeah, not a lot of time, but I do have to ask, what's the support level from your group for the Build Back Better plan?
Well, I think the view there is that that's a lot of money, and I think there's concern about, you know, on top of the infrastructure bill, which was also a lot of money, that you know, just general fear that we are spending sort of beyond our means. And that's the feedback that I continue to get from my membership, without, you know, necessarily them understanding in any detail what may or may not be part of that bill. They are thrilled that it seems like the estate tax provisions and the other provisions impacting farmland and estate transfers seem to be out of any versions that are being discussed. So that gives them some relief, but they're still looking at that as a massive amount of money.
Yeah, and we need to make sure that those boogeymen that have been chased out of it don't find their way back into that.
Don't find their way back, exactly.
Yep, that's right, that's right. Mr. Connor, it's just a privilege to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much.
All right, you hang in there, Chip. Yep, thank you.
You bet. That's Chuck Connor, President and CEO of NCFC.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Here we are, half hour to go until the crop production supply and demand report. What are the markets doing in prep?
Well, soybeans are selling off again here. So, you know, we trading okay through early morning, but we got to mid morning here, and we've seen an extension of the losses trading to the downside. So, you know, while the price action here ahead of the report highly bearish, probably limits the likelihood of a sharply negative price reaction. The technicals are very poor at the moment. So if we don't get a bounce coming out of the reports, I think that there's just more incentive there for the funds to continue to sell and you know, at least from a chart-based perspective.
Okay. Some buying interest came back into the wheat market in front of the reports. A little surprising.
Well, spring wheat futures, that's been the really volatile one, and they're up about a dime or so in the front end of that market. That's helping out the winter wheat markets, but buyer interest isn't nearly as strong there in the SRW and HRW. You know, and corn here, it's following soybeans to the downside, so not right. Being helped out by the strength in wheat at the moment.
All right, take us over to livestock trade. Negative numbers there.
Yeah, pull back a little bit in cattle. So that trend, that it's kind of just been a grind higher. We continue to make new highs for the move, but then we kind of struggle. So they're probably just waiting on cash cow trade to develop later on in the week there. Hog market is pulling back with heavy losses in the December contract. So we've seen some corrective moves to the upside here recently, but now pulling back some and facing just a little bit lesser pressure in the back end of that market.
Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Hey, if you are curious about how important of an issue this vaccine mandate is at farmer co-ops across the country, I'm getting a few messages in from co-op board members.
Oh,
and
cool.
This one says it really, really well. Just basically says, we have employees who say they will quit if the vaccine is mandated. It takes us an average of 42 days to hire a new employee.
Mm-hmm.
So how important is it? It's unbelievably important.
And at least another 42 days to find out if they're any good or not.
What? Yeah.
We're up to 84 days now.
Yeah, that's exactly. Exactly right. Okay. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hello.
Let's have a conversation right now with Kip Eidenberg. He is the Senior VP for Government and Industry Relations for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. You all know it as AEM. Kip, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Gentlemen, I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having me back. And I think we can finally say Happy Infrastructure Week, right?
Yeah, this is the first real one in like the last 15, but yeah.
That's right. This one's for real, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we think it's for real, and President Biden will sign it. We'll talk about that here in a little bit, but he will sign it. It's just a question of when he's going to do it. But boy, a huge deal for American equipment manufacturers, isn't it?
I mean, this is a massive win, and not only is it a win for bipartisanship in Washington, it is a win for our industry, and it's a win for rural communities, right? There's a lot of great stuff in this bill that's going to benefit rural communities, $110 billion for roads and bridges. We've all driven on those roads that are, you know, in a sorry state of right now, disrepair, those bridges that are not feeling, you know, all that safe as you cross. And there's money for, obviously, for water, both clean water, wastewater treatment. There's money for locks and dams. There's a lot of money for broadband. And boy, do we need that, not just for those of us who live in rural communities and just try to get on with our lives, but also for farmers and ranchers, right, who are increasingly relying on equipment that obviously depend on connectivity. So a lot of
Absolutely.
Great stuff in this bill for our industry and for America.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to come back to the infrastructure bill and talk a little bit more about it, but there was more good news for equipment manufacturers last week, and check me on this, but wasn't there some relaxation of tariffs on steel and aluminum coming from the EU?
Yeah, there was indeed. There was an agreement in Rome between the European Union and the United States to sort of ease up a little bit on these retaliatory tariffs that have caused a lot of pain and suffering for our industry and for American consumers. So, you know, rather than continuing on with tariffs under Section 232 on steel and aluminum, we're going to go back to more of a quota system that will allow manufacturers and anyone else who depends on steel and aluminum to purchase steel from the European Union at levels that are equal to what they were before the tariff. So, you know, is it a complete victory for free traders? Not quite, but it certainly is a step in the right direction. And this should help. Hopefully bring down cost of equipment and make us more competitive.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did get a relaxation on European tariffs on U.S. corn going into that, into the block over there. So that's good news there. This infrastructure bill, I talk every week with Greg Peterson at Machinery Pete about the used equipment market. And we've seen, evidence in the used tractor market that there is a real concern across the country about parts, about the availability of equipment. And here we are, we're going to be tossing the increased demand for equipment for these infrastructure projects in on top of it. Are we in a position that we can handle this increase in demand?
No, I tell you, well, we're not. And I can tell where you're going with this. I think the word is concerned. We are concerned about this, right? Because we're going to see real uptick in demand for equipment, you know, in the next 15 to, you know, 18 months, maybe even a little sooner, right, for some of the projects that are going to be shovel ready or, you know, close to shovel ready. Now, as you pointed out, it's already, you know, our industry is already facing a shortage of parts and components. And so how are we going to keep up with that new demand? And I got to tell you, obviously, there's some money in this bill that will help address some of those challenges, right, that are related to supply chain. But we've got to take a look, and this is not really just government, right? This is the business community. We got to figure out how we can improve our supply chains. There was a lot of fanfare a couple of weeks ago, you'll recall. It was a summit at the White House, and then the president announced that, you know, the Port of Los Angeles is going to 24/7 operations. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, that was 24/7 for one out of six terminals for 4 days a week, right?
Yeah.
So that's not 24/7. And when our competitors in China and Europe have fully automated 5G-enabled deep-sea ports that run 24/7 truly every day of the year, how in the world are we going to compete? So it's a real concern. And you know, it's going to hold, you know, as much of the win as this is for our industry, it's going to hold us back until we can get parts and components in through those ports and to the factories around the country.
Wow. Wow. And then throw on top of it some of the labor issues that are happening out there. Are you surprised that the strike at John Deere is still going?
You know, I got to tell you, when it comes to workforce development, boy, is that a problem for our industry. And we cannot afford, as an industry, we cannot afford any work stoppages, period, right? Whatever the cost may be, because we can't find enough skilled laborers to work in our factories to build some of that great equipment, right, that helps, you know, build, feed, and power the world. And so whenever you have a disruption to the workforce, it's a problem. And you know, you talk to a lot of folks on your show and outside of your show about, you know, how do we get more young men and women into this industry? How do we get them interested in manufacturing? And I think we as an industry in some ways have failed the next generation. We haven't talked enough about, you know, the benefits of a career in our industry and what the jobs today look like. They're not, you know, your dad or your grandfather's manufacturing jobs anymore. So we got to do a better job of talking about, you know, the family-sustaining jobs that you can have in the manufacturing industry and the interesting jobs that you can have. And until we get out there and start talking to young kids, and it can't start in high school, it's got to start before then, you know, we're going to keep facing these challenges.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll admit, I felt like I got a little bit front-run by Fox Business this morning, Kip, when I turned around and I looked at the screen and it said Pella, Iowa, you know, for the location of this report. And there they are at the Vermeer plant, and they're talking exactly about what you just said. They need to do a better job of promoting jobs in the manufacturing. It's not the dark, smelly, stinky, dirty environment that manufacturing used to be. It's high tech and clean.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, I spend, you know, my days traveling around the country visiting many of these facilities. And, you know, many of them are so clean that you could eat off the floor. I mean, that may sound a little cheesy, but it's true. And you've been there. You've seen these facilities, right? And increasingly now our member companies are looking for engineers to operate robotic welders. So they're looking for programmers, right, to build code for these equipment to operate. Or they're looking for software engineers. I mean, obviously, we're still going to need welders and fabricators and painters and all that. But even those jobs are different from what they were, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it starts with us. It really does. And we just, as I said before, we got to talk more about this. And I think we need a shift in our mindset as a society, too. It's not, you know, success is no longer measured by a 4-year college degree, right? It's measured by a career in an industry where you can raise a family, have a good life, put away a little bit of money for your retirement. And that's what we should focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. We, in the last segment, Kip, we talked with Chuck Connor, president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, about we focused primarily on the vaccine mandate and their reaction to the OSHA-driven vaccine mandate. What's been the reaction from the AEM membership?
Well, we're cautious about it. We're looking at it, obviously, you know, still trying to understand how this will be rolled out, how it will be enforced, and what impact it will have on many of our smaller member companies. I got to tell you, you know, we have always been supportive of efforts to defeat this pandemic and to get folks back to work and get the economy roaring again. And we're still committed to that, and we're happy to work with partners in government, state, local, and federal. But it has to be a partnership. And so whenever you have a course set by our elected officials that is more of a imposed mandate rather than a collaborative process, that's always cause for concern. And, you know, the economy is still a little sluggish. I mean, obviously, we saw some good good news on the jobs report here earlier this week. But even so, we're still not where we were before the pandemic. And I think it all comes back to competitiveness, right? We talked about the infrastructure bill. You know, China spends north of $3 trillion on infrastructure outside of China, right? They are investing in other countries' infrastructure for geopolitical reasons, right? Man. At the tune of $3 trillion. So whether it's being outspent on infrastructure, whether it's having onerous regulations and mandates imposed on us, whether it's workforce shortages or supply chain challenges, we can't compete if we're facing an onslaught of these types of problems. I mean, I think American equipment manufacturers can outcompete just about anyone on price, on skill, on service, on innovation, but not if the playing field isn't level. And I think this is what it all comes down to. And, you know, we need to get this pandemic behind us. We need to get safe. We need to get back to work. But we got to do it in a way that doesn't completely undermine our competitiveness.
Got it. Got it. Kip, it's always fun having a conversation with you. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Have a great rest of the week.
You bet. You know we will. Okay, that is Kip Eidberg. He is a Senior VP for Government and Industry Relations for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Okay, coming up next, there is a press release that was out at the top of the hour, Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act. We'll get the details from Matt Deppe, CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's, next.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us. And
hello.
At the start of the show, the very start of the show, there was a press release from D.C. Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act has been announced. And to give us some of the details, Matt Deppe, CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Matt, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Chip?
Doing just fine, just fine. Okay. It looks to me like Senator Fisher is the lead on this bill, but I'm not seeing any of X percent of cattle that must be negotiated. It looks like they're just requiring that all plants participate in negotiated cash cattle trade. Is that right?
Well, they're requiring that all plants do. When we look at getting the numbers or the percentage, they're going to use a rolling 18-month average trade within each region. And so that's how they're going to get to a number. And so in essence, we had a three-year rolling average before in the Cattle Market Transparency Act. This is 18-month. It's a lot closer to the real, to the current. But then at the end of that first bullet point, Senator Grassley's news release, it talks about, for a state like Iowa, does that mean that 60% of your cattle inventory always has to be traded on a cash negotiated grid type basis? No, it doesn't. It kind of hinges off of the lowest average in the country type of thing. So that's how the mandate has been messaged so far. And we'll see more next week when they officially drop the bill, I'm sure.
Right. Okay. I would assume that you're considering that a win, just the fact that all the plants have to participate.
We are. We're looking at it that way. We've been working really hard to mainly bring Senator Grassley and Fisher together on that one partition of a bill. Everything else has been very successful in terms of the use of a cattle contract library. That's been in our policy and our position for a long time. The next day weights or getting those carcass weights sooner to the public to chart currency of the feed yard inventory, that's always been on ours, our policy positions. And so this is what we've been working on probably since early August. Certainly from ICA's perspective, but certainly you can also see other organizations, the Iowa Farm Bureau, American Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, and U.S. Cattlemen on this in terms of endorsement, too.
Okay. Okay. Give me some perspective on this one. Prohibit the USDA from using confidentiality as a justification for not reporting and make clear that USDA must report all LMR information, and they must do it in a manner that ensures confidentiality.
Yeah, so the bullet point's a little bit redundant.
Yeah.
And as we look at that, I would tell you this, as we look at confidentiality as it relates to market transparency, the question we have in our association is whether we need to look at confidentiality and see, as we reauthorize LMR, see if we need to soften that up. I mean, the bottom line historically is we've got a sector within our supply chain that's consolidated significantly. And then on the other side of the gate, the producer side, we've consolidated. No doubt you can see that in the NAS data, but overall not quite as extensive. For our producers to be informed, confidentiality a lot of times gets in the way of understanding what is the par value of a fed steer in Colorado and in the Texas Plains, those types of pieces, based on the percentage of formula marketings versus cash negotiated or negotiated grid type marketings they utilize each and every week.
Okay. Okay. You mentioned the next day reporting of the cattle carcass weights. What do you gain with that?
So right now, Chip, it takes 13 or 14 days. If a steer dies today in whatever plant or across the country is harvested, that carcass weight does not show up on the AMS reports for 2 weeks. And it was a topic that got brought to our leadership summit and annual meeting 2 years ago, right before COVID hit. And so we took a position on it. We did some investigation, and certainly the discussion that we're hearing is Congress is going to need to legislate this. And so that's one of the reasons for the provision in the bill.
Okay. Yeah, and what you gain from that is just more clarity and transparency of the supply of market ready animals, right?
Exactly. And so in the hog industry, you get them right away, the next morning type of thing. I don't know if we're going to be able to get them right away the next morning type of situation, but certainly we can do better than 2 weeks out.
Right. Okay. And then requiring the packer to report the number of cattle scheduled to be delivered for slaughter each day for the next 14 days. That's a fair amount of transparency right there, isn't it, Matt?
Oh, it absolutely is. And as we've gone through this discussion, Chip, the 14 days, so you got your 50-14.
Yeah.
As we've gone through this discussion, we've had everyone that I've talked to anyway in our membership is really, really super supportive of making sure we have an understanding what's coming to the market 2 weeks previous in that 14 days. And so that's a really important part of this bill and previous iterations of bills from both Senator Fisher and Senator Grassley.
All right. What do you think? I think I know what the reaction is going to be from the majority of your membership in Iowa, Matt, but I think they're going to jump on this and be supportive, aren't they?
I think so. As some of this information has kind of gotten leaked out, I can tell you myself and a few other staff have gotten fairly high frequency of supportive messages and phone calls and those types of things. And so I think there's going to be support. I think we're going to keep working forward on this. Really excited about the two senators coming together and working forward from that.
Excellent. Excellent. Matt, thank you so much for the time and helping us understand what's in the bill.
You bet. You bet. Thanks. Anytime.
All right, Matt. That's Matt Deppe, CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. All right, we've got a report coming up here in just a couple of minutes. The crop production, supply, and demand. We'll get reaction this afternoon, 2:06 Central, from Bill Biederman at agmarket.net.